This episode of CougarCast is brought to you by WaveformSleep.com. WaveformSleep is the newest, coolest mattress on the block. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, look, it's a mattress that has speakers inside of it. And I know that sounds nuts, but it's not. It's actually really cool. I have one in my house, and it's really, really a lot of fun. Okay, getting uncomfortable. Here's the thing. It actually is great for helping you relax and have a massage. The sound reverberates right through the mattress. So you just lay on your mattress and it just like massages your entire body. It's really cool, man. It really is great. The other day I had it on and was listening to Greg Rubel through it. Okay, that's not true. That's not true. That would be weird. I'm getting massaged by the voice of the Cougars. Literally. Okay. Sorry, Waveform Sleep. Sorry about this. So anyway, go to waveformsleep.com. Go sign up for the email list. This product is apparently they're preparing themselves for a Black Friday launch. So stay tuned for all of that. But if you want to get ready and get all the information, go join that email list at waveformsleep.com. And pretty soon you'll have a bed with speakers in it. So if you're thinking about a mattress, you might want to wait for a minute. And my understanding, again, is that they also are going to have showrooms here in Utah County. So if you're a local, you're going to want to try that out. So go check out waveformsleep.com, go watch the video, and sign up for that email list. And now, it's time for CougarCast. Shirts, and this is CougarCast. Thank you very much for tuning in this week, and we are back with another exciting edition of CougarCast. Now listen, last week I was at Disneyland, and while I was at Disneyland, I attempted to record a podcast before the Washington game, and I had this idea, you know, I would do it while walking around Disneyland. I left my family at the hotel, and I was recording it, but I am not going with it. The audio quality wasn't quite good enough. Things got a little busy in terms of editing it all, and then the other problem is, it's absolutely crazy. It's so ridiculous. The Main Street Electrical Parade was going out of the background. So at the end of this episode, I'll throw in a little bonus. And let you hear like the first minute and a half of the Washington game breakdown. So I hope you forgive me for missing a week. Obviously, just real quick, another exciting squeaker win against USC. Everything's been said about that game. Really good performance. Everybody on the team did exactly what they had to do. And in order to win games where you're kind of, you know, like I've said, overmatched, it's about field position and making big plays. So, you know, the three interceptions caused... one of them obviously iced the game, but the two interceptions caused really short fields. And then the last aspect of that game was that anytime there's a tough catch to be made, it was made. Anytime a big play needed to be done, the offense came through. Against Washington, the opposite was the case. They allowed big plays. They gave easy field position to their opponent. And there were a lot of drop passes. So it went the wrong way against Washington. Now, what happens here is this... BYU is 2-2, okay? And that's the positive. Four games against Power 5 teams, pretty aggressive schedule against Utah, Tennessee, USC, and Washington. Pretty stout lineup there. They come away 2-2. That's sort of a win, right? Obviously, that's as good as, you know, people say, it's as good as you could have expected. And I suppose with the current state of BYU football and kind of where we're at, yeah, sure. Sophomore quarterback still trying to find his feet. You know, brand new running back, second year of Jeff Grimes trying to get everything installed and put in place. Yeah, I guess 2-2 is the best you could have expected. So that's the good. like a couple exciting games, and really this is what we're looking for. We're just looking to have fun and excitement. The crowd has showed up. They've played a big part in three of those games, and they have done their job. The on-the-field product has been good in the sense that they have come away with two wins, but let's not forget just a couple things. One, the two wins that they have were absolute squeakers. I mean, absolute, completely won because of clutch plays right at the end of the game. BYU has yet to have a lead after four quarters this year. Their victories have only come in overtime. You know, you have to go back to last November to find the last time BYU beat a team in four quarters. So I think that's relevant. I think that that they haven't been able to actually go out and execute and in 60 minutes be able to win. But they've been able to win. Like they've also been able to win. So I get that criticism, it cuts both ways, right? Ultimately they won. So what's the problem? But 0-4, I mean, overtime wins typically are, you know, really hard to come by. There's a reason the game goes to overtime. It's just, you know, who made the play, who didn't. BYU did. But this team isn't far off from being 0-4, okay? But they're not. So, woo! Thank goodness, right? Thank goodness for everyone in Cougar Nation. So, there you go. So, that's the first thing to kind of consider. The second thing that I think is fair to say, in the two wins, BYU went and grabbed them, and they found a way to pull it out and get it. I think Tennessee gave that game away to BYU, obviously. And I think, you know, USC did in some ways, but the Cougars took it. Similarly, BYU literally gave the game away against Utah. Zach Wilson threw a pick 12. And then you had, and of course, his fumble. And then we gave it away. Oh, geez. D'Angelo Mantel. Oh, gosh. Okay, let's not talk about it. The face mask. Oh, man. And then against Washington, you know, again, another instance where we gave the game away in a lot of instances. So, and Washington is a team you can't mess around like that with, and so is Utah. So, you know, if you give away games, then you're going to lose. And Tennessee lost to us, USC lost to us, and the Cougars, you know, despite foreseeing a lot of the things that had happened, you know, there was a lot of mistakes and penalties that USC caused. So the question that I have is, can the Cougars in half their games have executed and played to the level that they've needed to, where you wouldn't classify it as giving the game away? Two of the games, they have given the game away. So they're up and down. And again, the Kalani coaster continues. This is the biggest thing that I think we take going forward. After playing four games, a rough schedule, heading out east already, I just kind of think there's a chance that the Cougars could be beat up. There's a chance that the Cougars could have some issues going forward because they've tended to, in the first 3 years of Kalani, and here we are in the fourth, they've played up to opponents and they've played down to opponents. Except for if that opponent is absolutely terrible, then they handle their business. But they tend to play better against better teams, and they play worse against, you know, worse teams. So the thing is they kind of let whatever the environment is dictate what's happening around them. They're not to a place yet where they've got the leadership, the foundation, the whatever it is, to consistently bring it every time they get on the field. That just hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened through the first 4 weeks. So it's an interesting thing for me as I look at us going forward, because honestly, if you want the real read, okay, 2-2 against the Power 5 teams through the first 4 weeks. It's great. The real read on what BYU is will be over the next 4 weeks. The next 4 weeks will be really enlightening as to what BYU is, because they may come out of this gauntlet 2-2 again, right? They may come out worse than 2-2, or they might go 4-0. But if you want the best way to look at where BYU is now as a program, the best litmus test is to show what they do over the next four games. The next trimester of the schedule is really kind of the part where we find out. Look, that final four games, that's where it softens up quite a bit. It's these middle four that tell us the most, okay? So let's just talk about that for a minute. Okay, so this weekend, the Cougars play Toledo, the Rockets, out at the Glass Bowl, okay? So they've got a game. They're going out east again. They're going to be out in Ohio. And the Toledo Rockets, okay, I respect that team. I think they're pretty good. I don't think that this is a bum team, okay? It isn't like we're playing Idaho State here. And sometimes people try to talk about it in those terms. I think this is a pretty good team. Toledo out there. Then we're going home. We got a bye week. So after 5 weeks, we'll see where we're at. And then we're heading out to South Florida. So two consecutive trips out east. And then we have Boise at home. And then we're in Logan at the Maverick Stadium to go play Utah State. So these are four teams that I think most BYU fans would fancy themselves as saying the BYU program is superior to all four of these programs. Okay, maybe Boise people would concede that it's neck and neck. Okay, it's not. But people might say that these are equally good teams. Okay, obviously Boise has been more successful recently. Now that's partly because they have an easier schedule. They have the Mountain West Conference schedule, and the independent schedule for BYU has been tough. But Boise's, you know, BYU's taken their share at home. They've never won up there, but Boise's won a couple down here since we've started playing them every single year. So Boise State, Toledo, South Florida, Utah State, okay? BYU fans and Tom Holmo and everyone in Cougar Nation kind of see us as better and superior than three of these programs. And Boise State maybe as an equal. Okay, so is anything worse than 3-1 an indictment? See, people have already said after the USC game, oh, we'll extend Kalani Sitake. I'm glad they haven't. I think that they ought to let it play out. Let's see what happens. Because honestly, these four games are the ones. They're the ones. If he loses to Toledo, if he loses to South Florida, if he loses for the third year in a row to Utah State, and if, you know, let's see what that Boise State game looks like at home. You know, under these circumstances, you would look at this part of the schedule and you would, as BYU fans and what you picture yourself as, you would say we ought to go 4-0, right? And to me, that's something that you could maybe assume home to Liberty, home to Idaho State, at UMass, even though we lost to them at home a couple of years ago. We also beat them last year. And then, you know, the San Diego State game, who we've traditionally been better than. So that last four, you could say, okay, anything less than 4-0 is a disaster. I suppose you could give yourself 2-2 is as good as we could have hoped through the first 4 weeks, I guess. So as good as we can hope here is probably what, 3-1? 4-0? Right? So anything worse, if we go 2-2 over this next stretch, I think it's worth the conversation about Kalani Sitake. It just is. If they go 1-3, I think yeah. So I don't know where they go next. I don't know any of that, but it would be telling, would it not? So this next stretch of games, really important for the BYU football program. And I think that what you're going to see is that the Cougars are going to steadily improve. And I think this Toledo game is going to be the one that tells us the most about what to expect for the next 4 weeks. If the Cougars go and handle Toledo at the Glass Bowl, there's a real good chance they'll be all right after a bye week against South Florida, you know, assuming we don't party too much in Tampa and then get a bunch of people suspended for the Boise game. Okay. But the bigger thing is I just take a look at it, and then of course that Boise State and Utah State game, and those are obviously probably the two biggest, most telling games about where BYU is. That Boise and Utah State game will be the biggest, but these first two, these are, if BYU is what we think they are, they ought to be able to beat these two programs, even though you're on the road, right? If we're truly a team that could be in a Power Five and handle our business and go week after week the way we would do it, we would fully expect the Cougars to go and handle their business in these games. If they struggle, or if they drop one or both, I think you have to consider it a real problem. And if they're going to drop one, I think it's probably this Toledo game. So let's talk a little bit about the Toledo Rockets. Led by Jason Candle, the Toledo Rockets are 2-1 to open up their campaign. Toledo has played one game at home so far, so this is their second one. It's their biggest home game of the year in terms of name recognition. Obviously, they have rivalries and things like this, but the Toledo Rockets welcome BYU 2-1. Their schedule looks like this. They lost to Kentucky 38-24. I watched this game. The Toledo was beating Kentucky. They were in control of that game. And then Guadagni, their awesome quarterback, he got hurt. The backup came in, tried to do his job, but they couldn't generate points after that. And then the Toledo defense did its sort of thing. So Kentucky ended up handling their business and winning 38-24. I don't know what would have happened had Guadagni been healthy the rest of the way. But they lose on the road to Kentucky. They handle Murray State, which is an FCS team, 45-0. They beat the Racers, no problem. Then they play Colorado State in Fort Collins and come away a winner in Fort Collins, 41-35. And what was an absolutely wild game. Back and forth, back and forth. Again, had a chance to watch this one as well. And these teams were able to run and generate a lot of big plays against one another. So Colorado State really had opportunities to win this game. Toledo stopped them when they needed to, and they got their big plays when they had to have them. Now they welcome in BYU. Toughest test maybe to this point, maybe Kentucky. Similar sort of team, maybe it's BYU, but BYU certainly going to the Glass Bowl. Jason Candle always has his team pretty well prepared. I like what they do, and you know, there's a lot of things to think about when it comes to playing Toledo. So just a couple things. This is adjusted for schedule and performance and all the other stuff. I think the best probably advanced stat out there in college football is found at footballoutsiders.com. It's a combination of Brian Fromau and Bill Connolly's two stats. Brian Fromau has the FEI, Bill Connolly has the SP+. Between the two of them, they make F+, okay? And according to that, they have Alabama as the number one team, Clemson 2, Ohio State 3, Georgia 4. According to their performance, what they've seen, and, you know, who they've played, and then they crunch it all down and come up with a number. So F+, just notable teams in terms of F+, and where they're at. It's curious. Utah is 27, just to get that out there. USC is 33. Okay, so that's a pretty good win. Utah State is 35 on there. Other old Broncos, 37. Okay, it's kind of interesting with Virginia. Other people on the BYU schedule, though, that we should pay attention to in particular. So Kentucky, we just spoke about them. They're not on the BYU schedule, but they're ranked 54 on the SP+. Or excuse me, the F+. So F+ has BYU at 75. It has Toledo down at 92. Okay, South Florida, who's in 3 weeks, South Florida is 87. So according to Vance Metrics, South Florida is the harder team than Toledo. We'll see. Tennessee, by the way, is 71, and the Cougars are 75. So BYU, a couple wins over teams higher than them. And, of course, a couple of losses. Let's look where Washington is real quick. My suspicions are pretty high. Yeah, 13. So, okay. So BYU, 75. With all things weighed in, their scheduling, everything else. And Toledo's about 20 spots behind them. So that's kind of what the advanced stats say, and they tend to be pretty good in terms of weighing things out, and they usually have it right by the end of the year. Now, we're only four games in, so not a large enough sample size to really get it cleaned up and everything like this, but the Football Outsiders work that they do is really good, so go check them out. But let's give you more practical, non-advanced metrics. Let's just take a look at what Toledo is and kind of get a feel for them off the sheet, and then I'll talk about what I've seen watching two of their games this year. Toledo is very good at running the football. Really, really explosive team. Really like what they do offensively with running the football. They have a couple guys that really help them get it done. Brian Kobach is an explosive runner for Toledo. He had a huge game against Colorado State. He's had 47 attempts this year, 363 yards. That's averaging 7.7 yards a rush. He's got five touchdowns. It's averaging 121 yards a game. Mitchell Guadagni, their quarterback, he runs a fair amount. He extends plays and is able to take something that doesn't look like it's there and then find a way to gain yards anyway. So he's another threat, especially in the red zone. He's somebody that you got to watch for with his legs. So again, same sort of thing. He's averaging 6.6 yards. So BYU's got a problem there because you got to contain him in that pocket. You can't let him get loose. And you might have to take somebody out of coverage to work as a spy. So he's out of coverage. You got less people in coverage then. It opens some things up. So the quarterback, Guadagni, he's solid. And then another guy, he's not quite as explosive, but he's a good, big, kind of third down back, Shakif Seymour. He's a junior, same sort of thing, 4.5 yards per carry. They use him in spots. They use him to get a tough yard here or there. That's kind of who you've got to watch out for. The bad news is, as good as Toledo is at running, BYU has been bad at defending the run. They're giving up 215 yards a game. 215 yards a game. That's 116th in all of college football. Toledo is 11th in rush offense. So this is clearly a spot where Toledo is going to try to exploit and hurt the Cougars. Okay, so you want to see what BYU can do. Now, let's talk about that bad rush defense for BYU. Why? Why is it so bad? Well, one of the things that we've seen is that the Cougars have been okay with allowing teams to run the football. They have escaped this way, at least in two games, not with a victory after four quarters, of course, but they've been able to survive and get by allowing teams to run because they've been so cautious with big plays down the field. They've played coverage nearly every down, it feels like. The Cougars have only generated three sacks all years. They're not sending blitzes. They're not actively trying to get after that quarterback and being aggressive and taking some gambles in that way. That's not what Elisa Tuiaki's doing. He's busy trying to win because he's taking slow, methodical choices to try to force a team to work their way all the way down the field. A 15-play drive, right? That's what we're trying to get done, and you're hoping that you have linebackers who close or a defensive lineman who could blow up a play or a holding call or whatever, okay? So run plays are what BYU's defense is allowing teams to do. Their pass defense, just so to measure it against that, BYU's actually allowing less yards passing than they are rushing per game. 113 yards passing as a pass defense. They're allowing 115 yards rushing. So what's happening here is BYU is basically enabling people. And by the way, that's 53rd. So it's not like the pass defense has been outstanding. And I think part of the reason is because they don't get to the quarterback, but the and it's really hard to cover for a really long time, right? But they're trying to take away that space. They aren't really thinking about big plays. They're just trying to put a lot of bodies in the way. They're trying to, you know, cause as much problem as they can with the front four and then sit back as much as they can to try to force a really methodical long drive. And they're betting that there's going to be a holding, a fumble exchanged, a poor throw, a couple incompletions, and now we're in third and long, whatever it is, okay? They're working hard to do what they can to make it so that their opponents can't score a lot of points. And so far, it's worked. The way that points have been scored against BYU, when it's been a lot of points, it's been because the offense has turned it over. Defensive touchdowns, a scoop and score, pick sixes, short fields, special teams. There's been a lot of scoring by all three different phases of the game when teams have put up a lot of points on BYU this year. When they haven't scored, when the offense hasn't given them points, when special teams hasn't given away points, the defense has done a pretty solid job making life miserable and tough. So despite the huge amount of run yards, the design of BYU is to try to do what they can to take away as many big plays. Let's just take a look at that. So they've been pretty successful. The Cougars this year, through four games, have only given away 12 plays of 20 yards or more. So that's about three per game. Plays of 40 yards or more, they've given away three through four games. For reference, defensive big plays for Toledo. Toledo's given up 19 plays through three games over 20 yards. They've given up four 40-plus yard gains defensively. So Toledo's defense doesn't do the same. They take more risks. They try to bet big, to force turnovers. And, you know, this is something that they'll try to do as much as they can. By the way, Toledo's turnover margin is plus three. They actually have forced five turnovers through three games, and they've only lost it twice. They're plus three. BYU's turnover margin is dead even. They have forced six. They've lost six. So it's been an interesting thing when you look at those two kind of defensive philosophies. Is do you attempt to cause havoc and force big turnovers because of all the havoc? Or do you sit back and hope that a bad decision is made? You don't force the havoc. You cause the bad decision to be made because you've got so many people back covering. It's an interesting challenge defensively. The other thing that, like I said briefly, is I think they're going to have to count for the quarterback. Guadagni is a really solid player in what he's able to do on the field. He can throw it pretty well. I don't think that he's an elite passer. He's not Logan Woodside like we saw from a few years ago. But what Guadagni can do that Woodside doesn't do is he can move the pocket. He can run, and they like to get him out of the pocket and give him a simple read and go that way. So what you're going to see is Tuiaki's going to have to figure out what are we going to do about Guadagni. So he's going to do things that a lot of coaches do, and unless he's got a whole new approach to the game, I think what we'll see him do is he's going to dedicate a spy. He's going to dedicate a player somewhere, whether it's a defensive lineman, a defensive end, whether it's a middle linebacker or a weak side. What he's going to do is he's going to look for a player to not necessarily apply pressure and not necessarily drop back in coverage, but kind of stay within 5-6 yards of the line of scrimmage and then close out as soon as Guadagni tries to run. Now, you can't do this every single play. And they sometimes call design runs for Guadagni, but since his injury against Kentucky, they have gone away from that more. They've relied on the running back to do the lion's share of their running. Guadagni's been used less in design calls to run the football, but I think that they'll bring that back again to try to get a win over BYU. I think you're going to see him get opportunities to have design runs, or they're going to, you know, have him pull it back more often on the zone reads. So I think what BYU is going to be forced to do is try to do something about Guadagni from getting really big explosive plays, 10, 15, 20 yards, because, you know, everyone dropped back in coverage. There's this big window in front of him, and he's pretty quick. They're going to have to make sure that there isn't a big window in front of him. And I don't necessarily trust that defensive line to make him stay within the pocket and kind of, you know, contain in that way on the edge. BYU hasn't, it's a really hard thing to do. So this isn't necessarily, but they haven't been great with contain against really mobile quarterbacks. They haven't faced a really mobile quarterback yet this year. They have faced mostly pocket guys. Tyler Huntley has been the most mobile, but he didn't really run much against BYU. They didn't look to run. He didn't look to scramble. He liked his pockets and tried to throw. So that's the other piece of this is do you allow short routes and you give up the 5 or 4 yard or 3 yard route and try to close and tackle well and live with that and give the easy throw to Guadagni instead of having him, you know, scramble for something, because you could cheat up and take that away. But again, that opens up space for the rushing. So my guess is Tuiaki is going to allow those short gains as much as he can and use that to rein in the legs of the quarterback for the Rockets. And I think that he's going to, again, rely on this process of allowing Toledo to grind and grind and grind and try to work as hard as they can for every single point. So when you play that style of defense, it allows the other team to kind of get a little bit of rhythm and to kind of maybe see where the holes are and gets them more plays to kind of see where you're at. But so far, they've been relatively disciplined. Now, Zane Anderson's out for the year. They're going to have new personnel out there to play, and we'll have to see how that changes the look of the BYU defense. But I don't expect to see some massive change. Let's talk about Toledo from running the football. It's keep them in front, try to limit that quarterback, because that's where it can really kill you. On the design runs, they're not a great, this is the other read that I have on this, is they're not a great between the tackle running football team. They are an edge running football team. They get to the outside as best they can. So this is an Isaiah Kafusi, a Devin Kafusi game. This is a Raya Leotella game. This is a Zach Daw game. Then you might see more Leotella instead of Daw, because I think Leotella is, he moves a little better. He's a little more, he's not as strong and he doesn't hold the line as much, but I do think he does a good job of getting out into space and doing more to stop on the edge than you're going to see out of Daw. If it's a run up the middle and stuff, I think you'd rather see Daw. But I think in this case, where you can get really hurt by bigger plays is to the outside. That's where Toledo's going to run. That's where they're going to go. Kobach's quick, and that's how they're going to try to move the ball up the field with him. And that's primarily been the way that they've done it. It's been to the outside. It's not been up the middle. So maybe you'll see that adjustment. Maybe you'll see more Uriah Leotawa for BYU on that defensive line. Toledo's passing. So their pass offense this year, they are averaging 208 yards per game. Not good. That's 94th nationally. That's not an explosive amount of yards. Okay, they're not exactly setting it on fire through the air. Okay, they're almost under 200 yards per game. That's not good. BYU is allowing 213 yards per game, so there's a really good chance that Toledo's not going to be able to pass the football. So this leads into kind of quandary number two. I wonder if the real move this week is to get a little more aggressive, to not play the attrition game, but to come up, cheat forward as hard as you can, and let's see if Guadagni can beat you through the air. This is literally what every mobile quarterback, every team that relies on a mobile quarterback who's an okay passer, this is the problem that they face. This is the problem, frankly, that BYU had when Taysom Hill was the quarterback, is that they weren't able to throw consistently. They would be around 200 yards per game, but they'd be a really good rush offense. So you're playing against Taysom and Jamal, teams that decided to give a little space to those two bit the dust, right? But the teams that came forward and put 8 in the box, 9 in the box, and called blitz, run blitzes, and did what they could, really caused BYU to struggle offensively, despite having two very talented players, despite having Jamal Williams in the backfield. You were able to hold them down a little bit and make them really earn every single yard. I think that there's a real opportunity against Toledo to employ the really simple tactic of putting your team forward, taking away that space, making sure you have plenty of people to rally to the outside, and allowing your corners and your nickels and even a safety to manage without zone coverage and see what happens. See if Guadagni has the ability to beat you. Play softer coverage, play 10 yards off, and then bring all your other guys in, you know, and employ that tactic and see what happens. I think if you flip that, you know, you bring the safeties in, you got to drop the corners back, or else you're really at threat for a big play. So I really think, though, that there's an opportunity to really bother Toledo if you go that way, because I don't think that they can beat you through the air. He's an average thrower. He's not a very good passer. I don't trust Mitchell Guadagni. All right, and if he can beat you through the air, then you're in trouble. The one issue with that tactic, right, is, despite my feeling that I'm not sure he can beat you through the air, because his numbers haven't been particularly impressive, but Toledo has been very kind of pragmatic. They've allowed themselves to score by running, because running's working. And so if we're running and that's working, then let's just keep going, right? But Guadagni on the year is 60% percentage, completion percentage. He's averaging 9.6 yards per attempt, which is awesome, which is really, really great. Okay, 4 touchdowns and no interceptions. So they've been passing as a change of pace to what they're doing running. And so the thing is, you don't know for a fact. There isn't a lot of tape out there to suggest that Guadagni can't beat you through the air. But I think there's a chance that you might want to make that bet and then maybe make an adjustment at halftime. It's riskier, but there's a real opportunity for you to really hold them down and really cause them a lot of problems, instead of allowing kind of a longer plays that rely on a penalty or a mistake or a couple incompletions. I think that the Cougars are going to have some issues there, making a choice defensively what to do. My guess is that you're not going to see option B. I think that you're going to see Tuiaki allow them space and allow them the opportunity to run. I think they're going to have pretty big running numbers. So it's kind of weird. The thing that Toledo's not great at is passing, and yet the fear of the big play, the fear of the big play generating either a touchdown or a shorter field, is enough that they're going to do what they can to just force them to work as hard as they can, instead of betting on the guys that you have and betting that Guadagni can't burn you. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess there's, it's a more conservative approach to handling this scenario. So that's what you're going to see there. Let's talk about Toledo's defense. Toledo's defense, like I had alluded to before, they do more to give you interesting looks. They take more chances. As such, they've given up a lot more big plays than BYU's defense. But they've forced turnovers at a higher rate. They have sacked the quarterback a whole lot more than BYU has in terms of sacks per game. They have the ability to on their defense. The thing that they don't have the ability to do on any sort of consistent rate is stop the run or the pass. But their saving grace has been that they will force a problem because they'll get a sack, a tackle for loss, or a turnover. But they're in their quest for one of those three things, they're giving up a lot of yards, they're giving a lot of big plays up, and as a result, they're giving up more points. So it'll be interesting to see if BYU's offense, which has been, you know, I mean, we feel pretty good about how they run the football, but then I got looking at it, their rush offense this year, 120th in the country. They're averaging 102 yards per game running the football. That's a full 167 yards less than Toledo's averaging per game. The BYU pass offense is 254 yards per game, which is okay. 59th in the country. It's right in the middle. And then, you know, the other thing that BYU's offense hasn't done particularly well is they've allowed 10 sacks. And that's a couple things. I think that it has a lot more. That number, you might say, well, 10 sacks, that's 92nd in the country. We're giving up too many sacks. I think there's obviously there's always two factors in a sack. And some of it is just poor blocking. And I would say, 60%, six of those 10, I don't know this. I would need to go through and look. But my eyes and my hunches is that 60% of those six sacks this year have been because of poor blocking. Four of them have been instances of Zach Wilson not taking care to get the ball out and to move forward and to you know, act quickly or being between two minds. Or maybe that's a function of receivers not getting open. As you know, football, the ultimate team sport. So everybody's kind of culpable at the end of the day. But I do think that the blocking for BYU, I was kind of surprised when I saw that we've given up 10 sacks. We give up 2.5 sacks per game. That kind of surprised me. Now, we face some good defensive fronts. National rankings and all that doesn't adjust for that. So I get all of that. It's just something to consider that it appears that if you want to get to the quarterback, you can. And if you want to get sacks against BYU, you can do that. Toledo's going to attempt to do this. Of course, you would say, of course, but BYU doesn't really go for sacks. BYU only has 3 on the year, right? So it's not, and the reason BYU has 3 sacks has nothing to do with, I think they have the athletes and the ability to get there. I really do. I think that they could get there, but we're bringing 4. And when it's 4-on-5, you don't get very many sacks, right? And sometimes it's 4-on-6 because the running back's there to also block. So it's, you're just not going to get that many. The key though with that is to see if you can force a decision and do what they can. And BYU kind of does a really nice job of that. So the numbers aren't there. And they were getting blasted for this against Washington because they were allowing Jacob Eason to take his time and to beat them that way. And so I guess they were, you know, they deserved it. But this is just, I don't know that there's any point to getting angry with it or upset with it. I mean, we've seen it now for 4 years. This is what Elisa Tuiaki does defensively. He doesn't generate pressure, period. He's a we're going to beat him because I don't believe that most teams can have long drives, and I don't think that we'll give up very many, you know, big scoring plays. And the offense ought to be able to score enough to keep it out. So there you go. Last kind of factor that I want to talk about as it relates to the BYU offense. So 120th in rushing, 116th, or sorry, excuse me, I misread, 120th in offense, and then 59th in passing offense. So right now they're doing better than, you know, they're right in the midpoint basically of college football, passing the football, and they're not been very good running the football. And I think there's a couple reasons for that. We've relied more on Zach Wilson. We've asked him to do more to try to win football games. And it's been to our peril in a couple instances. And then, there was a couple games where the passing did work and it came through. So his development is continuing to, improve and become a work in progress. But I do think it's what's leading to some of the bigger mistakes that are being made out there, is this effort to try to make Zach Wilson kind of the focal point of the BYU football team. We might be paying our dues now to have something beautiful by the time he's a senior, or next year, or by the end of the year, hopefully. The other thing that I think is the most worrying about the BYU offense is what they do in the red zone. Because the numbers kind of lie on this. They're 15 for 17, so a lot of red zone trips. They're four games. You're getting about four chances in there per game. And 88%, that's not bad, right? That puts you 43rd nationally. Like, you're in the top third of college football in terms of your ability to score once you're in the red zone. That's good. That's good. But it's largely that high because of the work of Jake Oldroyd. He missed a field goal. By the way, Jake Oldroyd, let me just, here's a, if you want my big life, I'm not a good life advice guy. You shouldn't listen to me on life advice. But there's one thing I know. If you get a good nickname, you hang on to it, period. If someone's like, "Oh, look at that, the Godfather's here," you're like, "Yes, the Godfather's here." Like, you need to, if you get a great nickname, you hang on to that as hard as you can, because you could get called something else. Okay. And I'm sorry, Jake the Make is an all-time. That's an all-time nickname, all-timer. And his, I don't know if you saw it. He said he doesn't like it. He doesn't appreciate the nickname. He doesn't like Jake the Make. Well, he said that, and he made it known publicly, and what has he done? He's missed a field goal and an extra point. Embrace it, baby. You gotta embrace it. Once you came out there and said, "I like ice cold roid or solid gold roid." Okay, no. Those are terrible. That's ice cold roid. That's terrible compared to Jake the Make. Jake the Make, baby. That's gotta be it. By the way, the other thing is it's kind of fun to watch, and maybe he can get there, but there's a chance that Jake the Make, and I'm gonna ignore what he wants. Jake the Make is going to end up being the all-time points leader at BYU football. There you go. How about that for prediction? So, we'll see, but I think there's a real chance for him to make a run at it. He may not get there, but it'll be close. I think Jake Oldroyd with his seven field goals, but that means that seven of the 15 times that we've scored in the red zone have been field goals. Eight of them have been touchdowns, which is really bad. BYU's punch-it-in rate, right, is 111th in touchdowns scoring rate in the red zone in the nation. So we're only scoring 47% of the time we get to the red zone, less than half, and less than a coin flip, right? So, and actually, I think you have a slightly better odds of hitting either red or black on a roulette wheel than we do is scoring a touchdown in the end zone. It's actually a worse bet to take a BYU touchdown than either red or black on roulette. So it's an interesting issue that BYU must fix. And this is a Jeff Grimes thing. This is a kind of weird play calls. I think the rugby thing is weird, and it's cool, and it's clear. Like, I like using all the different talent and Kafensis and Gwamoloku and all this. It's fun, but I don't know what to make of it yet, because it hasn't really. It's been good a couple times. It's been bad a couple times. I don't. It's kind of weird, but when we're going to some sort of weird rugby thing instead of feeling confident in our ability with Zach, it's like you feel comfortable with Zach Wilson throwing and getting you all the way down there, but then when you got a couple yards to go, it's weird. So I'd like to see BYU obviously score more touchdowns down there. It's going to make a big difference. It's just going to make a huge difference. And their execution in the red zone, and their ability to score down there is going to make differences in wins and losses. I think it was the difference, obviously, in the USC game when they were really efficient down there and they were really efficient in against Tennessee, and they really settled for field goals against Utah and Washington. So it'll be a big one to see what Toledo does defensively against BYU in the red zone. By the way, I looked at that. Teams have been in the red zone 9 times against Toledo, and they've given up 6 touchdowns. So 2 out of 3 times. So if the Cougars' number is going to go up and get better than a roulette wheel spin on red or black, this is an opportunity because Toledo has allowed people to get in the end zone. Okay, so look, pretty comprehensive look at BYU-Toledo. I think what you're going to see is BYU, again, has decided that... So first of all, Tyson Williams is not in there. And Katoa at running back. We'll see how they fill in. So far, Asupa's been better than Katoa. I think that what you're going to see offensively is now it's going to be fully in Zach Wilson's pocket. He's going to have to go and make all the plays. He's going against Toledo's pass defense, which gives up 283 yards per game. So the Cougars, you know, probably need to throw for 300 yards to come away with a win here. I think the defense is going to play really conservative. I think Toledo will have longish drives. I think that they're going to try to do everything they can to take away some of the big play ability of Toledo. By the way, on offense, Toledo has had 7 plays this year of over 40 yards. 7 through 3 games. BYU's had 1, right? Through 4 games. Toledo through 3 games, 20 plays of 20 plus yards. BYU has 16 plays of 20 plus yards. So Toledo's big play offense, that's how they've relied on getting up the field and scoring. They attack the edges, they look outside on the runs, and then on the throws, they look up the middle. So that's how they kind of balance that out. They throw up through the middle, and they run to the outside. I think that BYU will be pretty effective at slowing down the big plays of Toledo, because they've been pretty effective at slowing down big plays all year. And I think that that's the tactic that they'll take. The real question here is, what can BYU do against a porous defense like Toledo? And I think the answer is that I think they'll do a little bit better, but I don't think they can handle really long yards. So again, this is the same problem as every game, but shorter fields, field position, and being able to set yourself up in that way, I think is going to be really important to getting a good road win. Cougars have the ability to beat Toledo. Toledo have the ability to beat BYU. It's going to come down to some of the tactics and also how clean a football game BYU can play. Are there going to be drop passes? How many turnovers are we going to give? What sort of short fields are the Cougars going to be able to generate and put together through punt returns, through kickoff return, through turnovers, through any of that? And are they going to be able to generate any big plays? I wouldn't bet on the BYU offense getting a lot of big plays. I don't think that Toledo's going to get a lot of big plays. So consequently, it becomes a field position game, and it becomes kind of a low-scoring affair. So I think it's going to just come down to, like I said, that red zone efficiency. And if the Cougars settle for field goals, they may leave Toledo with a loss. If they get touchdowns, I think they'll definitely win. So there you go. That's the big outlook for this week's game against Toledo. Again, appreciate all the emails and tweets. And I'm sorry again that I missed last week against Washington, but I just felt a little bit ridiculous as I was listening to it. I was like, I made a miscalculation here. So we'll leave you a little clip of that so you can hear that. Sorry we missed you this week. Maybe we'll be back early next week for the bye week. I have a couple plans for that. So email us, cougarcast@gmail.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Waveform Sleep. Go check them out, waveformsleep.com. And go sign up for the email list. At the very least, go watch that video. Go watch that video that we have posted on that site. And that's it. All right, thank you for listening to Cougar Cast. And as always, take care of each other. Be nice to each other. I don't say that every time. Why did I act like I say that every time? I don't. But all right, thanks for listening. Give us a review. Tell your friends about the show if you enjoy it. And always go Cougars. Greetings, my name is Keith Schertz, and this is CougarCast, live from Tomorrowland, in the happiest place on Earth, right here, Disneyland. My family has been on vacation all week, and so I'm walking back, the park just closed, the Main Street Electrical Parade is going through, and they're getting ready to kick everybody out of here. And I have been thinking all week about what is going to happen between the BYU Cougars and the Washington Huskies. And there's no escaping it. BYU has been playing some winning football. Dreams have been coming true the way they have been for my sweet little daughters this week here at the happiest place on earth. They're asleep in a hotel while I abandon them and have a good night out. All right, let's get down to brass tacks while I talk here a little bit. Here's some of the thoughts that have been going through my head as it comes to the Washington Huskies. Last year, I gave my big, big breakdown on what Washington does. And really, it was like my love letter to Chris Peterson, what he does as a football coach. And so we're going to cover that in this episode. And then we're also going to talk about some of the important things that BYU has done in order to put themselves into a position to come away with victories and not only winning, okay? It was at this point that I had made eye contact with Mickey Mouse. And the magic never stops, folks. The magic never stops. Took my breath away. Had to stop what I was doing. Anyway, again, sorry for missing last week. Hopefully we get the Rockets this week in the win column. And we move on to South Florida. Okay, that was a little bonus. Take care of yourselves. Bye. Go Cougars.